Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back, sports fans, to another episode of the Charity Stripe Podcast, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one sports podcast network in Los Angeles. For those listening at home, on the road, in the air, or in the water, do you believe? We have a great show for you guys today. George Niang joins the boys, so buckle up, tuck it into your waistband, because here we go. 3, 2, 1, we're back.
And now, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. We are live on the Charity Stripe Podcast with your hosts, Alex, Josh, and Nick.
We're back, baby. It's the Charity Stripe. Pitch your free throws because they're free. Sode 368 coming hot at you guys, and Sode 367 and all the other sodes before that. And I am joined on this one by Alex Toss Me the Rock Tosopoulos, Nikki Snacks Kreider, and George Niang for a really awesome, fun show about basketball. We laugh a lot. It's great. I'm going to remind you that we're brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Go to BetOnline.ag today. Place all your bets there. Why are you betting anywhere else? Just go to BetOnline.ag right now. Put some money down. You're listening today. It's a Monday. The Cowboys are going to smoke the Eagles. Put it on them. Can you put futures on there? Absolutely. Dodgers, World Series, that's a good one. Join me with the White Sox, World Series, $50 I put down at the beginning of the year. I could win $900. Shaboom, shabang. BetOnline.ag is the Pink's Hot Dogs of betting sites. Go there after you listen to our awesome podcast with George Niang. So, without further ado, the Charity Stripe team presents George Niang. Enjoy.
All right, guys, you heard an hour introduction. Normally, we would give a really nice intro to somebody, but a lot of our listeners are Longhorns or Big 12 type people, and this guy has terrorized us all, not for one season or two seasons or three seasons, but all 4 years of college. We got George Niang joining the boys now of the Philadelphia 76ers. George, how you doing? How you fitting with the team? How's it rolling so far in Philly?
It's been great, man. Just getting acclimated, being back on the East Coast. You know, I haven't been in the same time zone as my family since I was in high school, you know, going to Iowa State.
Yeah, Jesus.
In Central Time. But, no, it's been great. I mean, the guys are awesome. You know, we have great chemistry. It's been a blast so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How's it? I mean, you worked hard to carve out your role in Utah. How is it carving out your role in Philly? Are there some jitters kind of going to a new team, kind of figuring out how you're going to fit in? Or at this point, you've been around the league enough, you just kind of got to go and do your job type thing.
Yeah. The more you focus on shit that you can't really control is when you start taking away what you do. Like, I'm going to be fighting a mental battle of, like, you know, having the jitters of not knowing where I fit in, or I can just be like, hey, this is what I bring to the table. This is what my niche has been everywhere I've been. And I'm going to do that to the best of my ability. If you like it, great. If you don't, then let me know when you start liking it type of deal. I mean, there's really nothing to it. You really just got to go in and do what you do. Because if you start worrying about other stuff, you're just taking away from your opportunity to do what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a guy on the team that you gravitated towards so far?
It's still early on, but, I think Tobias reached out to me as soon as I signed. I've known Joel since college. Danny Green's been great. I recently just met Matisse Thybul and Furkan Korkmaz and, you know, Shake Milton I had seen in Vegas. I mean, I have like a personal relationship with all of them. So it's like you go down the list, you're like, oh, well, I kind of am close to him. But you don't really know until it's like day 72 and everybody's like, damn, I hate seeing this person's face, or damn, I like, you know, hanging out with this person on the road. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think I get along well with everybody, so there's no real drama here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It can't be drama when you're trying to get a championship by them. This team's obviously going to contend. And Dybul, I don't think I'd go within 10 feet of that guy. Like, swipe me. Like, that guy's got it's crazy.
His instincts, he has like spidey senses. Like, I dropped a cap the other day and went to go pick it up, and he already like had it in his hand.
Yeah, like, have you ever seen Mr. 3000 when they drop the beer bottle and Bernie Mac like snatches it? Yeah. Dude, I don't even think they'd finish, dude. I think Dybul would just have that thing ready to go. I mean, you're back on the East Coast now. We're looking at your recruiting. Like, it's not like you were like a small recruit. You're a top 100 recruit, top 75 recruit. Like, where was UConn? Like, where were they?
They weren't really feeling. I mean, you got to think about it, right? Like, the way the game was when I was in high school was like 6'10" power forward, 7 foot center. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so it wasn't like when I was like, I wasn't your prototypical four man that was like shooting threes. Like, they still wanted guys that like played, two guys that played down low, and like a guy that had a little mid range. But I was more or less like rebounding the ball, bringing the ball up. But I wasn't like quick enough to be like a small forward at that point. So it was like, like, I remember Michigan came in, and I can't remember his name. I can't remember what the coach's name was. He was an assistant, but he was like, yeah, you're great. Like, you do good things, but like, what position could you play? And I was like, all right, like, you clearly don't get it. But I mean, yeah, so UConn wasn't involved. I mean, Providence came in late. Funny story is, you know, the head coach of Boston College, you know, he's always been like, I'm so pissed I didn't recruit you. He's actually at Penn now. So when I signed here, he was like, called me. He was like, whatever you need, let me know.
I wanted
to be like, I don't have any eligibility left, but you know what I mean? We can make it work. But no, I mean, I kind of fell into, you know, the top 100 kind of late. I mean, I didn't have my first Division I offer until my junior year. So,
wow.
I mean, it's kind of, I'm not going to say it hasn't put a chip on my shoulder, because it definitely, you know, it definitely has. It's motivated me to wake up every day and be like, all right, now I want a Division I offer. Now I want a mid-major. Now I want a high major. Now I want a blue blood, you know, which at that point I didn't get, but I committed so early. Because I just wanted to be loyal to Fred Hoiberg and Iowa State, because they were the first high major program to offer me a scholarship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it ended up working out for sure.
Yeah, I mean, shit, it did, right?
Yeah, you guys are freaking dominant every year, you know, except one. I don't want to rub it in, but I will take some of the blame for that one year. I had you guys winning the national title, and that was my sophomore year of college. I think it was your junior year. Yeah. And that's on me. It's not on you, because if these guys will tell you, I have the worst luck in March Madness. The first year we started this podcast was the year Virginia lost as the one seed, and the whole season, I'm telling everybody and their mother, like, yo, like, Virginia is the best team I've ever seen. They have it in the bag. Like, and then like, I should have known when DeAndre Hunter went down that there was going to be trouble. I still rode the train and it was just over. So
he had a t-shirt and everything. Like, he's a Longhorn, right? And he had a Virginia t-shirt.
I bought the Virginia t-shirt.
To Virginia.
None.
Yo, where'd we get this guy?
Yeah, complete. Don't worry. I'm a sellout.
Long Island.
Yeah.
That's where we got it.
I'm a Northeast guy too, dude.
We didn't leave him on the ferry.
Yeah, we should have left me on the ferry. Yeah, it's my dad. My dad tells my mom that all the time. How is it playing with Nerlens in high school? Did that help your recruitment? He's the number one guy coming out of high school.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, that helped. I mean, I'd never seen Calipari. You know what I mean? Like, Coach Krzyzewski. Like, all those guys were coming into the gym, and it made me realize, like, basketball is a game of like, obviously you got to be talented, but it's also like who you know. Like, if Duke was like, hey, we're not going to recruit this guy, but you know, I have an assistant that went to Arkansas, you know what I mean, you should start recruiting this guy. And the next thing you know, people are like, oh, SEC schools are recruiting him, Big 12 schools are recruiting him. Like, next thing you know, everybody's recruiting you. And it was literally just like a fall pickup. You know, I don't know if you guys know how it goes down, but like, you play like fall pickup in front of coaches. Like, it was literally like 50 coaches in the gym, like every time we played. It was like madness. It was crazy. And the wild part was we got invited to so many tournaments my senior year that we literally only played four home games. Like we played four home
what?
Games.
What?
That's yeah. crazy.
So we traveled to West Virginia. We traveled to Illinois. What's that tournament down in Florida? Not the City of Palms. It's one of those
big Palms places. Something. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Whatever. We did that. Yeah, we were all over the place. And you know what I mean? No team was just volunteering to come play us at home. So my basketball coach was just like, all right, we'll play everybody on the road. And we had like four home games and we just made it work. But New Orleans was, he still is, him and Rudy Gobert are neck and neck for the best shot blockers. Obviously, Rudy Gobert is done at the NBA level and I was with New Orleans when he did at the high school level, but definitely.
Yeah. Did that feed in even more to the recruiting? Because you had New Orleans that you were playing with and it's like, if anyone gets within 10 feet of the rim, he's swatting it.
Yeah.
So were they like, oh, why can't you play, you're 6'7", like why can't you play like a big too? And it's like, well, no, like, I got this guy. Like, what do I need to do? Like, I'm going to pair up with him. I don't need to do everything he's doing. That's why I got him on my squad.
Yeah, straight up. No, for sure. I mean, but it also helped me because when we played against each other, like I had played against him so long that I realized how to like throw off his timing. And when I'd score, they'd be like, oh, this kid's scoring on, you know, the best shot blocker.
Yeah.
In the country. So, I mean, right. It helped me more than it hurt me. That's for sure. And I didn't realize it till now, but I'm super thankful that, you know, we were teammates. We won a lot of games together, whether if it was AAU or high school.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we had a lot of great memories.
Would you argue that those games were more high pressure or stressful than they were in college just because there were so many coaches watching you guys play?
That's a good question because, you know, coaches don't really like boo or make sound effects.
Right. You don't know what's going
through. There's like that pressure of like, am I sucking today or am I not sucking?
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah.
Whereas like, if you're you know what you're getting on the road, like, I hate you, you suck. You know what I mean? But at home, you know, everybody's cheering for you. So I would say, you know, me being I don't want to say immature high school kid, but like probably valuing things that I didn't need to value. Or like whose opinion really mattered. I would probably say playing in front of the college coaches was probably tougher just because at the end of the day, you didn't know who liked you or who didn't. Like you'd walk off the court, they'd be like, hey, we liked your game. Or you'd think someone was there for you and they weren't there for you. And I don't know. I've always had a theory on it. It takes like, imagine your whole life working on something and someone who has a clipboard and is a college recruiter, like, values whether you're going to a high major school or you're going to a low major school. I mean, that's wild. You know what I mean? But kind of how the world is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's super subjective. I mean, you talk about that Michigan coach who thought you were a great player but didn't know where you fit. Like, that's just completely up to his opinion, you know?
Right. And I don't get a scholarship to go to Michigan. I don't get a chance to go to a top 20 academic school where, like, literally you get a degree from Michigan. It's like, how do you mess this up if you have that?
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. I remember playing because I played high school football in Texas, and I remember the practices when we'd have scouts or we'd have coaches come, everyone's ass got super tight. Like, it was just like no one fucked around. Like, it was super all business because no one wanted to make a mistake out there. And even if you weren't a great player, you still wanted to think like you could make somewhat of an impact on that scout.
No, for sure. Yeah. No, I completely understand. Football is totally different though, because they are cutting guys left and right.
Oh yeah.
Do the wrong. It's so militant. I feel like with football, like if you stretch the wrong way, they're like, he's not prepared. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah. It's like, it really is super strict. I mean, I don't know. If you just, the whole Josh Gordon thing will always rub me the wrong way in the NFL. And I'm sure you're right. As a pro athlete, you're like, now, like, it's a joke because weed's legal, like, in anywhere you can get it. Like, and it's almost harder to get now than it was in college, realistically. And then a guy like Josh Gordon, instead of helping him, they made him the villain.
No, it's the scapegoat. They're like, we're going to make you the poster child of the don't smoke weed or you'll never be able to be something in this league. Like, that guy is, like, elite.
Yeah. Sick. Led the league in receiving.
Yeah. Like, and we're just like going to hold that back because he and I hate bringing other people's drama into it, but I'm sure there's guys that have had, like, you know, assault charges that are still able to come and play, but because this guy can't put down
a
drug where he's sitting in his apartment or house doing it. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to get into it, say the wrong thing, but it is the charity stripe. So I might as well just.
Hey, baby. So you just got to hit your free throws on this podcast. And that's all we ask, man.
Which, oh my gosh, did you do last year? We're talking, you're 40, 40, 90. I mean, we're talking about carving out a role on the 76ers. You're a 40, 40, 90 player last year, highest 3-point percentage you've had in your career. Yeah. What does it mean for a guy that's kind of deemed by media as a role player? Like, what is for in your mind, like in your mind, like how does being efficient, how important is that to your game? And also, like, what are people sleeping on in your game that they don't realize that you can do?
Yeah. You know, obviously with my role in Utah, it was, you know, to come in 5-6 minutes a half and, you know, when I was open, shoot the ball and hopefully make it. And I think the whole process behind that of being like efficient was like I had to get to a point where I was like, all right, I'm gonna shoot the ball, but I'm not gonna give a fuck, but I'm gonna give a fuck enough to like where like I'm not gonna put pressure on myself to make it, but I know like I have to make it. Like there's like a fine line between like not giving a shit, like if you miss, and to know that the next time down the court if you're open you still have to shoot it, and like actually not just coming down and being an idiot and just throwing the ball up, right? So once I got to that point, it was more or less like, all right, I know what I'm in here to do, and this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, moving forward, obviously you want to handle the ball more. You want to be able to make plays. But the longer you're out there making shots and keeping the defense away from other superstars that are on the court, you realize like, oh, like maybe I can add like a pump fake sidestep or a pump fake get to the rim and kick to someone or throw a lob. And like, once you realize that, once you master like that role of what's going to get you on the court, you get more and more opportunities. Obviously, I would have loved to have, you know, more time, you know what I mean, handling the ball. But, I mean, it worked out for me, you know, to come to Philly where, you know, they do need shooting. They do need passers and facilitators. So me being here is something that allows me to flourish and grow as a player and honestly get to a point to see how far I can take the game of basketball with my skill set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's people that watch a lot of basketball that know basketball know how invaluable a player like you really is, especially when you're paired with a big, like you were in high school with Nerlens, like you were in Utah with Rudy and now with JoJo, because you're still a big that can score around the paint. And when a big is guarding you and you're stretching the floor and you're spotting up in that corner, like you're so important to the team because now they can't double and be like they want to. And if they do, he's kicking it across and you're knocking that down. Like
for sure.
It's huge.
Joel Embiid, he opens up so many lanes with, you know, just his presence by being out there. And he draws a double team or he's scoring. Like, how do you want it? I mean, pick your poison. So I'm real excited about that. You know, I've never played with a big, I played with two mainly defensive bigs in my career, but to play with one that's this offensively skilled is something that I'm really excited about.
You play with MT? You play with Miles Turner?
I wouldn't say I played much when I was in Indiana.
Yeah. But he was on the. We just had him last week.
Really? Yeah. He was always great to me.
Nice dude.
My time there was just short lived.
Yeah, I mean that's. I mean, I'm curious, like you watch your thing, your little video with Joe and Royce with the Utah Jazz kind of just followed you around for the day. And then you like kind of jokingly told Joe that he's like a fine wine, but a lot of guys in the NBA are like that. It's, you know, more so than ever, just a game of adjustments. Like baseball's always gotten that credit as the game of adjustment, but really the NBA has become like Kyle Lowry's like the prime example of the guy that's kind of changed that narrative.
Yeah. You know, the biggest thing is I told someone is you just got to stick around as long as possible and just keep trying and loving to fail. And if you fail, like try to find a new way to achieve like your dreams. Because when I first came in, I was like, all right, like I'm going to be able to dribble, pump fake. And, you know, what I mean, have the ball in my hands. That wasn't the case. And it took me 2.5 years to figure out that if I wanted to get on the court, I was going to have to, one, play defense, and two, make threes. And once I did that, it opened up, you know, roles for, you know, me to be able to guard better or better players and, you know, be able to have the ball in my hands more or to come off screens to shoot. And once you master like one small role that's going to get you on the court, like I said before, it just opens things up. But a lot of guys like have been told how great they are their whole life. Like, you're the best, you're this, you don't have to, you're athletic, you're this. And it's humbling, man. Like when you have to sit in the mirror and be like, I've done the game of basketball this way my whole life. And if I want to keep this lifestyle, keep this career, keep my dream alive, I have to change it. Like, you're telling me, like, the first day I was like, I'm going to come off pin downs and like shoot. And I went like 1 for 11. I'm like, I suck at this. There's no way like I'm ever going to get to this. And then, you know, you get to 4 for 11, then you get to 7 for 11, then you get to 10 for 11. You're like, all right. Like, but the process of that is guys don't like that uncomfortable feeling of knowing that they're not good at something. So when it gets uncomfortable, they're like, I don't want to do this. Like, this, the NBA style isn't for me, and da da da, and end up giving up on themselves. Where I was like, man, I've put way too much time in, way too much effort to just go out and not try everything that I possibly can to make it work. Like, yeah, I was a back to the basket player in college, but that wasn't going to work out for me in the NBA. I was going to either have to go play in Yugoslavia or, you know, Japan, China. Korea, China. Yeah. It would have worked there, but I wanted to be an NBA player. So either you figure it out, get humbled, and continue to work every day and struggle. And obviously there were days where I felt like, damn, am I ever going to get another chance at this? But if you put enough work in, I promise, you know, these guys were, I mean, everybody's talented at this level. If you put enough work into figuring out what your role can be to get on the court, you'll make shit happen.
Yeah. Off to that point really quickly, I want to just talk about something because we are the Charity Stripe and we had a guest on our show the other day and he said there's no excuse for shooting under 50% at the free throw line. And you're an 87 career percent shooter. Yeah. What is your take on that? I mean, do you think that there is no excuse or is there some exceptions?
I mean, I don't want to make excuses for anybody because if you put enough time in, you know what I mean? You're
going to hit.
You figure it out. But I mean, the game is so mental. And if, you know, you can't hold it together mentally or if you're, I mean, there's different like variables. Like some guys have like huge hands. So it's like a shooting, like a tennis ball for some of these guys. So you shoot, you know, it's uncomfortable shooting the ball. Like you're used to like dunking and laying the ball up and you have to go up to the free throw line in front of like 20,000 people that are screaming, yelling. Like if you don't feel confident up there, like I don't care what you're doing. Like you're not going to make it.
You feel that way even with guys like JoJo and like Dirk. I grew up in Dallas. I'm a massive Mavs fan, 7-footer Jokic, who just won MVP. Like those guys are knocked down from the line. They've got massive hands, like huge hands.
I hear you, but look at Shaq. You know what I mean? Like you're talking about like a small percentage of 7-footers that.
Of course, they're they're in a different class from shooting standpoint because they're
the most skilled 7-footers that you could. You know what I mean? Like why don't we list guys that can't walk and chew gum at the same time?
Right. Well, I will say I don't think Shaq was really working on it either, but he didn't have to. I mean, I know he's working on it, but you know what I mean? Like not necessarily like. 3 hours a day, every single day in the summer.
Yeah, you're right. You know what? At that point, if you work at it, you'll be good at it. Then it's just not important to you. At the end of the day, if it's important to you, you'll make enough time to be good at it. Some need more time than others, but yeah, there's probably no excuse for shooting that. And don't be setting me up to ask me a question about who shoots.
Nah. No, that's it. You're off the hook. Hey, look, man, we're not putting you in any kind of position like that. I do have one question. Like when we found out we were going to interview, like my immediate question was, you know, we kind of brought up the junior year early bounce and your immediate reaction, it seemed like was I'm coming back for my senior year when you could have gone to the NBA. Like, I'm not going out like this. I'm going out like on top or as on top as I can be, which is as admirable as it gets, especially when, you know, you said Iowa State gave you a lot at the jump, you giving back to them. What's your relationship like with Fred Hoiberg? What was the conversation like when he's the one that goes to the NBA? Because it is an opportunity that's really tough to pass up, but you're like the one that's running it back as well.
Yeah, that was, it was definitely kind of weird, right? I didn't think that us getting bounced was going to be the last time he was going to be my coach. But at the same time, I just didn't think I was ready, and I couldn't leave knowing that, like, I went out the way I went out. You know, yeah. That's just not how I was brought up, not how I was, raised in the game of basketball. A lot of people say it's admirable, but I think it was the best thing for me. I had to deal with, like, a new head coach, how to, align with my teammates once, the new head coach came in, how we were going to figure things out. And it ended up, I think I learned the most, my senior year, just from the simple fact that, my first 3 years, Fred really gave me the reins, and I was able to do a lot and didn't play much defense and had a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm. Whereas, Steve Prohm, when he came in, he was more like a point guard coach. So he was more like post up, stand in the dunker spot. Like, don't shoot too many threes. And that was like, I had to find different ways to be effective. And then obviously there was a turning point where I was like, all right, I'm going to play my game and you're going to like me or you're not. But it was tough. I mean, it was a weird situation, right? The NBA season doesn't end till June, and he was going to take the Chicago job and they weren't done till June. So we're sitting in the office, like, hoping that the Bulls beat the Cavs so that Thibodeau keeps his job because they go to the Eastern Conference Finals, and then LeBron hits that dagger in front of the bench, the dagger three, and I'm like, it's over. I was like, we're done.
Jesus.
And then I went home, I think, before summer school, and he called me and was like, if you come to terms, and I'm going to take the job. And, I mean, it happens, but I was happy for him because he's always wanted to coach in the NBA, and that's something he's passionate about.
Yeah. It's a crazy situation. I mean, it's like, the marriage, or like the cross point of like your dreams and protecting other people's dreams as well.
Yeah.
It's the game. It's pretty wild, but
you got to walk the fine line of being fair to other people's dreams, but also putting your dream, like, not disrespecting anybody chasing after your dreams, but putting your dreams first, especially in this business, because
it's a cold world
we live in, man.
Yeah, it's all any business, bro. Like, it is a cold world. But yeah, Chicago job, it ain't the King's job. I'll say that, you don't have to say it, but that's the fact. You've been doing some podcasting on your own. I mean, Toss, you've listened to the, George's podcast a bunch.
Yeah, the one you do with Crew. And we were talking about guys that have carved out a role in the NBA. Yeah. JJ, right, who just hung it up. Like,
man,
elite podcaster. Forget how good he is at NBA. Like, that guy can talk with the best of them. What was the inciting incident for taking on podcasting and wanting to do that and talk to people?
I had done like a broadcaster camp with like the MVP National, the Players Association put together. And I was like, oh, like, this is cool. Like, and I always like getting to know people, and I think podcasts are funny. I mean, I don't listen to a bunch, but I think like just like shooting the shit and like talking and like getting people to like tell stories is super cool. And so the Jazz were like, hey, during quarantine, like, do you want a podcast? And I was like, shoot, I don't have anything else to do. This probably helps me like stop eating and drinking wine. You know what I mean? So I was like, yeah, sure, let's try it. And the first person I got on there was Jordan Clarkson. And like, if you guys know him, he's like a gem of a human, like neck tattoos, came into the league, no tattoos, but like, he just is all about good vibes and doing his own thing, and he doesn't care what other people think. And I always admire that about him. So I was like, I think it's always cool because the perception of people that you see before you actually get to have a conversation with them is like totally different after like engaging with them on like a podcast or getting them to tell stories. You're like, one or two things you're like, oh, I don't, how's this person going to be? And then you're like, yo, they were fucking so cool. Like they had so many stories. Or you're like, this person's going to be so cool. And then they, you're like, this person is a dud. They suck. Like this was, you know? So it's like, you get like a mixture of like, you realize like you can't read a book by it or judge a book by its cover. And you're like, you kind of become passionate about it. And I also have respect because the amount of research that people got to do so you don't look like an idiot on these things is like out of this world. Like interviewing my teammates was easy. When I had to do like other people, like the mayor or even like Chris Brickley, it was like, I looked up that he was like producing an album, but I was asking him questions as if he was like rapping on it. Cause I didn't know like what producing meant. He was like, bro, I'm not singing on this. I'm just producing it. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Okay, well, going further like, on that. What the hell does that mean, bro?
Do you want to like, can we go work out now or something?
Exactly. He was like a dude that was like, had like super cool like vibe about him. I didn't know he was that cool.
Yeah. Is it safe to say that you'd be interested in getting to broadcasting after the NBA?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I tell people all the time, like I even told you guys before, like I'm a normal dude. I like doing normal things, getting to know people. Like I don't think I'm that much cooler than everybody. So like podcasting is like fun because like where's a better time for you to just run your mouth, talk some shit. You know what I mean? Like get a reaction out of someone, see what they have to say. And then
preaching the choir. I mean, this is what we do, you know?
Yeah. That's why we do it. The amount of times we've been surprised, like, we'll get to it in a second. We're going to do a couple of quick hitters, but then we always ask every single guest the same question at the end. And it's your favorite sports memory. So you can just start ruminating on that. Yeah. But the amount of different answers we've gotten, they've been all over the place and we're always surprised. I think like that's what it is, right? It's we always think we know about people. We always think we know what they're thinking, what they're doing. But like to get that surprise is really refreshing. So we're probably about to be pretty surprised here. A couple of quick hitters for you, though.
Let's go. I'm ready for them.
All right. Who finishes 12 beers first? You or Joe Ingles?
Oh, Joe Ingles.
The Aussie.
The Aussie.
Hey, those guys just can delete them. Like, so he won a bronze medal, right? I know this isn't a quick hitter, but it's a good story.
Go for it.
They won a bronze medal, and it's like 4 a.m. And I like wake up to pee and like get an alert on my phone that's like Australia has won like a bronze medal. And I kid you not, like, you know, you go try to go back to sleep. You're like in and out of sleep. It's like 15 minutes after I got up. I don't know how long before, probably like 30 minutes before that they had won. He's like has 3 beers in his hand, like is FaceTiming me at like 5 a.m. because I don't know what time it is over there screaming. Like just hammered. And I was like, didn't you just win like 25 minutes ago? He's like, so? Literally told me he was just out like drinking till like 5 a.m. until they had to go home. And I was like, you're just different. And then he went at home and turned into, you know, turned dad mode on where, you know, he has 3 kids, a wife. So, but he can drink with the best of them. I'm impressed. Him and Bojan Bogdanovic and
that's just not fair. I mean, it's just the Europeans, right? They're just they're different. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right. Here's another one. In your opinion, best in the world right now.
Best actor, model, basketball
player. Get out of here.
Best Hooper.
Podcast. No,
the charity stripe, 100%.
Thanks, baby. Best basketball player.
Playing, currently playing or to ever do it?
Currently.
Right now.
I mean, I think there's no LeBron. I mean, I don't think there's.
Really? Still? Over KD? Over Giannis?
Man, if you're on LeBron's team, you're to the mountaintop.
That is true.
Giannis, you know.
Did it.
He did it, right? Not taking anything away from him, but LeBron is – someone's going to have to really kick him off his throne before I'm like, it's not him right now.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's more likely to win a title first, the Kings or the Magic?
Shit.
That is a great response.
Yeah, that's, man. I hope we're alive for it, but the Kings.
I say the same thing all the time. Yeah. Hey, got to give Halliburton some love, man.
My guy. He told me he's out there grinding. So I was like, I'll be watching. I believe not every game, but I'll be watching.
That's amazing.
Speaking of college, best college player you ever faced?
Oh, Joel Embiid, 100%. Dude, when I played him the first time, he was fucking scoring on me like left and right. And I had like the ball in my hands the whole time on offense. And I went like 4 for 20. And people were like, how couldn't you score? I was like, motherfucker, I can't see over him. I put the ball up in the air. Like, I couldn't see.
Yeah.
He's incredible.
Can I throw something real quick at you, though? Because yeah. I've always had this statement. I mean, we've seen a lot of sick guys come through when we were there. Like you, Smart, JoJo, Wiggins. Mm-hmm. Like, we were all there for that. Like, we're there. We're same age.
Yeah.
I think one of the best I've seen, if not the best, is Buddy. Like, is that crazy? In college.
Yo. Especially his senior year, the most shot every time. And like, you'd go over stats on a scouting report and be like, yeah, Buddy Hield shooting 54 from the field, 50 from three, and like 94 from the line. You're like, he shoots every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he, like, not like right then and there, for sure, him easily. Mm-hmm. He was definitely the best, like, then when it was college, but. Now, I mean, Joel Embiid was unreal.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. He was amazing. All right, we already teased it to you. Hopefully you got a favorite sports memory in the back of your head. We ask this to every single guest. It can be you as a player, as a fan, anything in your life, your favorite sports memory of all time.
So I think it was 2016, right? My agent was out in L.A., and he gave me tickets to Kobe Bryant's last game. So literally I got to sit and watch. It was like, when I tell people, I'm like, it was like, you know, when you hear like good music and you're like, well, it was like music to the eyes. Like, you get to watch Kobe Bryant every time down, just like do whatever he want and like be down 10 in the fourth quarter and just come back and win and like just make shot after shot after shot, because he was like sucking in the first half, but he shot 60 or 50 times. Right. And it was like music to the eyes. It was like the most unreal thing ever, because you knew he was going to shoot. Like, it's like what you play in your head, like, oh, they double team Kobe over half court. He splits the double team, step back. It's good. Like, it was just like, you knew the ball was going to go in, but you didn't know how it was going to go in. And like towards the end of the game, like he gets a switch on like Trey Lyles and just raises up and like does what Kobe does and makes like his last shot. It was like the most picture perfect thing that we take for granted in sports, because sometimes when careers end, like, they're not picture perfect. Like, nobody wanted to see Vince Carter go out with COVID. You know what I mean? Like, I remember having like shoes set up that I could have Vince sign when he came to Utah, but COVID ended that, right? Yeah. It was like the most picture perfect thing for like one of the greatest, or the greatest of, you know, when I've at least that I thought of, like, going out and ending his career. And it was, it like didn't get any better than that. That'll be the greatest sports moment I ever.
That's awesome.
That is so sick. You were there for that.
Where were your seats at?
Oh, they were at midcourt. And I remember my agent telling me, like, hey, like, if you're not going to go, like, please don't sell them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I took, my aunt was on a business trip out there. So me and her went, and it was like.
Favorite nephew season for life.
Yeah. I'm good with her forever.
Yeah.
I get a Christmas present every year.
On the clock, bro. That thing strikes, you know, midnight. That's you. Dude, I couldn't tell you where I lost my virginity. I could tell you where I was when I watched that last game. That was it's the craziest. It's the best last game of all time. Better than Jeter.
You know what someone told me the other day? And like, the most overrated like legend, they said, was Derek Jeter. And they started listing off how he didn't have like MVPs or scoring like batting titles. He got 5 batting titles.
5 rings.
I know, but like, when you talk about like individual, like, Come on, guys. Don't leave me hanging on this. I mean,
I am a diehard Red Sox fan. Like diehard. Like
he's dear star heart. Like when Aaron Boone hit that home run, like I don't know if I ate for a week.
I would fucking kick Aaron Boone in the nuts if I saw him. Oh. Like these two and maybe you would have to, with the new Philly contract, would have to bail my ass out of jail if I saw Aaron Boone on the street. But I think Jeter, like every time he was up, you knew it was dangerous. No matter who was pitching, no matter who was on the mound, he just got it done. Look, I mean, no, I saw the stat line too, like Nomar's peak years versus Jeter's peak years. I love Kike Hernandez, but the fact that Nomar's jersey is not retired by the Red Sox pains me. Like the Nomar situation pains me to death. Like that he didn't get a ring with us, but I think Jeter's sick. I really do.
Yeah, he is. But you know, I also did get a little nervous when Barry Bonds or Ken Griffey.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
McGuire were out there bat.
Yeah,
I don't know what they were doing in the locker room, but that ball was flying.
Yeah, it's a rocket.
Joe Ingles deleted beers. Barry deleted baseballs.
Yes. George Niang, George, thank you so much for joining us. Absolute pleasure, man. Hey, go kick some ass. I know me. I'm not gonna. Are you a Celtics fan deep down? We get off the record.
But I'm
it's good. Long past that. Good. Yeah. Look, I'll secretly be rooting for you. Just don't tell my Boston homies that I'm pulling for the 76ers a little bit.
I appreciate you guys, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, man.
Of course.
Best of luck, bro.
All right, you guys take it easy.
Amazing show. We had a great time. Hope to run it back with the man. He was fantastic. Honestly, really great guest. Off air was great. Just the whole nine yards. Can't thank him enough for joining. Fans out there, drag both feet in bounds, swing on a full count, rip that puck, hit that putt. Hit your PKs because they free and hit your free throws. Why, guys? Because they are free. We out ya. We love you.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.